It's Morning in America. I'm Bill Bennett. Michael Rubin is a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. Great friend of this show. Thank you, Michael, for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
You got in, went to the office, took a nap so you could be ready for us, huh?
Well, the nap is coming next.
Nap is coming next. Okay, where'd you come from?
I was coming from Miami Beach. I was giving a talk with Representative Ross Layton on the Iranian challenge.
Great. Oh, well, we'd love to know the outlines of that. But can we start with the hikers?
Indeed.
What's going on? Why would you take a hike on the Iraq-Iran border?
Well, I have to plead guilty because I actually hiked that same area where they were seized.
All right, then you're the right man to ask. Is it gorgeous? Is it beautiful?
It is beautiful. It's also the area, if you remember, that there was a Kurdish Islamist group that was linked to al-Qaeda that was concerning us at the beginning of the Iraq War, Operation Iraqi Freedom. This is that same area. But the question to me is whether they really strayed across the border, or conversely, whether they were seized and brought across the border. And then the sub-question was, did any Kurdish officials simply provide the intelligence to the Iranians that these guys were there? Because the border more or less runs along a ridge, and it's hard to mistake it.
All right. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Are the Kurds in cahoots with the Iranians?
Not officially, but there's been growing concern that the more we signal that we are planning to withdraw from Iraq, the more different groups and different factions are making accommodations with the Iranians. And we had, for example, the Patriotic Union of Kurdistan's representative in Tehran. And this is the same group that Jalal Talabani heads, condemning the American occupation of Iraq and talking about how the Americans needed to withdraw immediately. It almost seems that as we signal weakness, people, even if they don't want to, are forcing themselves to make accommodation with the Iranians, and this may be a sign of that.
Yeah, I remember that great phrase of Bernard Lewis, anxious propitiation. Do not show anxious propitiation.
Exactly.
Which seems to me what we're doing. So what will they do? They'll bargain or they'll hold these guys for a while, then they'll probably let them go?
Presumably. I think they will hold them for a while. One of the lessons which this draws, though, is about a week ago, in the Washington Times, there was a story quoting a senior former administration official talking about how when we had arrested Quds Force members and held them, this is the Iranian special group that promotes terrorism, that we didn't have solid evidence against these three. And sometimes people leak for the sake of leaking, but this is a real situation where it can have consequence because the Iranians can take that report and say, well, we're just going to hold them for 3 years.
Yeah, I understand.
And there's a big difference between students hiking and Quds Force operators who are engaged in terrorism.
I guess the reason I think they'll let him go is because they let go of, is her name Roxanne Sabari?
Indeed. I mean, I don't think they're going to do more than that, but I do believe, especially in the context of the show trials in Iran this weekend, that they are going to make some issue of it in order to test Obama. And don't forget that there's a former FBI agent who has been missing in Iran for over four years now.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. They're not exactly afraid of Obama, are they?
I don't think they are.
Yeah, I mean, he's let it be known that he doesn't want to meddle. We've gotten nowhere. Is that a fair statement?
Fair statement. And actually, what drives me a little bit nuts is if you are going to take the initiative to engage, what I find to be diplomatic malpractice is not to be able to define your metrics, what the metrics for success are before you engage. Obama has talked about a timeline, but he hasn't talked about, the State Department hasn't talked about any way to measure the progress of its diplomacy, and to me, that's always a very bad situation.
Tell me about Syria, because I guess I missed this one with all the reading I was doing. Of course, you know, there's so much more emphasis on the domestic stuff, but that aside, we restored diplomatic relations with Syria. Why, and was this a good idea?
Well, we actually never formally broke diplomatic relations with Syria. What happened is, if you remember, back in February of 2005, the Syrians allegedly participated or sponsored the assassination of Rafiq Hariri, the former Lebanese prime minister. And in response to that, a large number of countries, the European Union, countries in the European Union, the United States, withdrew their ambassadors. We maintained our embassy. We still had a chief of mission and so forth. And we basically said, we're going to do this until you cooperate with the United Nations Tribunal, which is investigating this assassination. Well, Syria didn't really cooperate. The most they've done is reopen the American Cultural Center, which they closed, which is basically a library in Damascus. But Obama said, okay, well, we're going to restore our ambassador anyway. And unfortunately, the signal this sends not only to Syria but to other countries is if you engage in any rogue behavior, all you have to do is wait about 4 years, and eventually the Americans are going to forget their concern, but we're certainly not going to hold anyone's feet diplomatically to the fire.
Yeah. We were doing a review. I guess the Pew people had done it. We were summarizing it, and, you know, after whatever it is, almost 200 days, about the only country that, you know, we really have let down dramatically, or where our public opinion of the administration is so much lower, is Israel. But apparently Hamas and Hezbollah think better of Obama.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's always worrying when our enemies are thinking better of us, but they're not changing their behavior.
Mightily discouraging. Mightily discouraging.
Indeed.
So, I mean, go ahead. You know what to say.
The aspect of that is that the whole basis of alliance is the idea that friendship transcends, and it's always a negative phenomena when being a friend of the United States means that the United States lashes out at you, and being an adversary of the United States means the United States coddles you. That's not the dynamic we want to be promoting.
I want to, just finish the list, because in the last week or so we read this not angry, but you could see they were very distressed letter from Vaclav Havel and Lech Walesa, you know, about the missile sites.
Oh, indeed.
I just got off the phone with a guy from Jacksonville, Florida, is originally from Colombia, and he said that Colombians are very nervous because of the, you know, cozying up with Chavez, and they're wishing Bush were back. Roger Cohen, did a New York Times piece yesterday in the magazine section, and he talked about talking to people in Iran who said, "Where's Obama? Where is Obama?" So, I mean, we're not helping. I guess we're not really helping the revolution over there right now.
No, we certainly aren't. There's a few things. I mean, talking about this letter from Vaclav Havel, and I believe also Lech Walesa, Valdas Adamkus, who was an important Lithuanian anti-communist leader. I mean, basically the problem is too often in the United States, history is a decade and anything beyond is forgotten. We have to recognize that memories are deeper in Europe, in Iran, and elsewhere for a reason. Now, with regard to Iran, one of the greatest ironies I see right now, and this plays into that quote you gave me from Roger Cohen, is that when people were bashing Bush for promoting civil society and his democratization program, what they were saying was, by doing this, you're tainting basically civil society in general in Iran. But now, just on Saturday and Sunday, we had these show trials in Iran, and I was reading the transcript of Kian Tajbakhsh, who is an American, Iranian-American scholar who was arrested and was just on Iranian television pointing fingers everywhere, to Hala Esfandieri at the Woodrow Wilson Center, to George Soros, to the Carnegie Endowment, basically a who's who of Washington. Anyone who's taken part in dialogue with Iran was fingered as part of some elaborate coup plot. And if we're going to apply the same logic then what we have to conclude is that engagement also taints Iranian civil society. Now, I don't believe that this is the case. I don't believe that we should gear the U.S. policy to what makes the Iranian regime comfortable, but we also have to be consistent and recognize that if the Iranians are going to prosecute everything going down towards engagement, we better have a policy which takes in less consideration of what makes the regime comfortable and does more what we think is right. And that perhaps could include track two dialogues, but it also needs to include more forceful diplomacy.
Let me ask you this, Michael Rubin. We're talking to Michael Rubin, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. I was up two nights, just this image in my mind that we had read about these families hearing a thud outside their door in Iran, and then seeing the body of their son or daughter dropped off, cut, mutilated, bruised, and dead from, you know, being in that, what's the name of that prison?
Evin prison.
Evin. From, you know, having been demonstrators on the street, and apparently a lot of this going on, people disappearing and then being beat up and killed and then dropped at the doorstep of their family. At the same time, it seems to me a lot of the media is saying, but the seeds of revolution are there. We saw it in the street. It will happen. It will come. Will it? Are we so sure it will? It seemed to me a pretty bloody and ruthless.
I'm not so sure it will. Yeah, the Iranian press just reported today that 70, there were protests at the cemetery marking the 40th anniversary of the beginning of the riots. At those protests, 70 more people were arrested. The reason I'm not sure, and this is more a concern I have about U.S. policy and U.S. intelligence, first of all, it's not the ordinary people that matter in these cases. It's the security forces. The question in Iran is, will the security forces turn? And that will be the key determining factor to see whether this people power revolution succeeds. Now, when the media and when public commentators talk about Iranian politics, they often talk about this guy's a reformist, that guy's a hardliner. But what we don't hear is anything about the factionalization within the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, which ultimately is a big black hole for us. Not only, I'd argue that it's not only a big black hole, we don't understand it in the academic community, but also I'm not so sure that U.S. intelligence understands it either. And if we're going to have a real policy towards splintering the Revolutionary Guard, we need to understand it much better. I would just point the...
Well, you're saying that there are sympathies in the Revolutionary Guard toward revolution.
There may be.
There may
I'm
be.
Not so sure, but the point being, if we don't know, that's a problem. And remember, for example, in the case of Romania, what really allowed the revolution in Romania to succeed and Ceausescu, Nicolae Ceausescu, to be overthrown was when his security forces defected.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that's going to be the determining factor, because remember, in Iran, sovereignty comes from God. It doesn't come from the people, and therefore, it doesn't matter what 90% of the people think. The Revolutionary Guard exists to protect the supreme leader, and ultimately, that's what we need to get past. And the scary thing is, of course, the Iranian people and the United States have the same adversary here, because if there is a nuclear weapons program in Iran, the command and control over that program is in the hands of the Supreme Leader and the Revolutionary Guard, the same people that are throwing down people on the street.
Got it. Michael Rubin, as always, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is the person who should be our Secretary of State. Clear boy, amazing. Great grasp and great help to us. We thank you very much. That was Michael Rubin, American Enterprise Institute. We have a link up to stuff he's written, and you want to go to it and learn a ton. We'll be right back. We'll go to your calls, 866-680-6464. It's Morning in America.